Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading a story called Every Summer the Seniors in Our Town Are Forced to Attend a Mandatory Summer Camp. It Held a Horrific Secret. This is written by Trash Tia and is in what we are now calling the Camp Redwood universe. So I hope you enjoy this story, and if you've seen the Camp Redwood series, this will be a prequel, the start of it all. And if you haven't, I hope you would maybe go check it out because it's a great series. Let's get started. I was 13 years old when I first saw a kid try to escape. Clara Danvers was a senior at Aceville High School. She wore pastel colors and flower crowns in her hair. I didn't know her very well since I attended the middle school down the road, but I knew she was one of the most popular girls in her class. Clara was the type of all the girls in our town aspired to be. Her beauty wasn't eye-catching in a town like Aceville, where all of its people were ridiculously attractive. Clara was running from the inevitable, summer camp. Camp was mandatory in Aceville. At the time, I wasn't sure why. All I knew was that all 18-year-olds were obligated to attend camp for the remainder of their summer before college. And yes, you would be right in thinking it was practically a human rights violation. It was their summer. Aceville's kids were teetering on the edge of adulthood and responsibilities, their teen years and beloved childhoods dwindling, and that last summer meant a lot to them. Of course, they fought back. Clara Danvers didn't strike me as a rebel. She looked like the type of girl who followed all the rules and joined as many extracurriculars as possible. She had the perfect friends, the perfect boyfriend, straight A's, and was Harvard-bound, according to word-of-mouth traveling. However, on July 16th, 2016, I saw a different side to her. The memory is vague, though I remember small tidbits. I remember being in the store with my mother. I remember it being a hot day, the kind of heat I hated. It was too warm to think straight, and all I wanted to do was sit in the backyard and read. I didn't have a choice whether I accompanied my mother, though she had blackmailed me with the reward of getting a new comic. Mom was talking to the cashier. She was friends with half the town, so I wasn't surprised when every person she passed by bid a hello, shooting a smile at me. I remember being bored. I needed to pee. And I was at that point in my life when I was wary of being seen shopping with my mom. It was pretty much social suicide for a seventh grader to be seen with their mom, so keeping my head down and pulling my baseball cap further over my face, I headed over to the comic book section. All of my favorites were there, and I had $10 to spend. I was in my element. Skimming through Spider-Man issues, I found myself captivated by the colors. Spider-Man was a kid's comic, I knew that. I'd made the mistake of pulling one out of my backpack at school, only for Summer Forest to snatch it out of my hands and hold it up in the air, a wicked smile on her face. Do you still read Spider-Man? No, I snapped back, my cheeks burning bright. Liar, Summer snorted. You still read Spider-Man, isn't that like for little kids? I shrugged. It's a good comic book. It's for kids, Summer laughed. You're so weird, Adeline. I'm not going to say it was traumatizing. Some kids had laughed along and some had ignored Summer. I snatched the comic off of her and shoved it back in my bag. Then on the way to class, I shoved it in the trash and started watching makeup YouTube tutorials. I still wasn't completely healed from that incident, so ignoring a smiling Mary Jane in a funky lab coat, I moved on to the more adult comics. Well, they were adult in my kid brain, at least. Picking up Teen Titans, I flipped it over and scanned the back. Mom was still chatting to the cashier, and my urge to pee wasn't going away. I figured stepping outside to cool off would be a good idea, even when I knew I was just stepping back into the baking heat, away from the pathetic cooling fan sitting near the door. My plan was to go back to the car and blast the AC. Mom was going to be in there for a while. I could tell by the way she was leaning against the counter, already making her roots. I was sliding into Mom's car, trying not to wince when my bare legs sunk into hot leather, when a scream rang out, startling me. When I had twisted around scanning the parking lot in front of the store, I saw her, Clara Danvers. Dressed in shorts and a t-shirt, her sneakers pounding against steaming tarmac, her strict blonde ponytail flying behind her, Clara was running for her life. At first I thought she was running from some kind of animal. Coyote attacks were common, but not in broad daylight. Except Clara wasn't running from an animal. I recognized Mrs. Peters, one of the high school teachers. Mom had been friendly with her. Mrs. Peters was in her mid-40s and wore thick sweaters in 90-degree heat. The last thing I thought I'd ever see was the teacher sprinting after the retreating senior, the kind of look in her eyes that I had known my whole life, replaced with a look of intense determination. It was almost comical, like I was watching a cartoon. I laughed. I felt bad, but it was hard to ignore that hysterical spew of laughter crawling up my throat. Clara was a good runner. Maybe she was on the track team. Though Mrs. Peters, amazingly, was faster. She was in good shape for her age, long strides catapulting her further forwards, swinging arms driving momentum. "Clara Danvers!" The teacher wasn't out of breath, though neither was Clara. Neither of them were giving up. Watching the bizarre display, I found myself following them, though I was slower, darting behind parked cars, keeping myself hidden. There was something clutched in Clara's hand. When she brought it to her ear, her eyes wide and wild, lips moving frantically, I realized she was talking to someone. When Clara twisted around to scan for the teacher, I knew she had made a mistake. I watched the scene unravel in front of me like it was going in slow motion. Clara's phone slipped from her grasp and she let out a sharp cry, ducking to try and snatch it back up. But the teacher was on her tail. "Miss Danvers, you are acting like a child!" The teacher reached out and snatched the girl by the back of her shirt. Clara shrieked, trying to battle her way out of the teacher's grasp. But Mrs. Peters' grip was harsh, her fingernails sticking into the bare flesh of Clara's arms. "Get off of me!" The girl was acting like a caged animal, and I didn't understand. It was just camp, right? I understood Clara and her class not wanting to go, because it was their last summer to be free and kids again. Maybe the girl was acting dramatic, but I could empathize with her. I watched Mrs. Peters drag the girl, spitting and cursing, away. I could still remember their words. Clara Danvers didn't swear. At least, that's what I thought. She was the golden girl, after all. Clara was yelling names, presumably those of her friends, and Mrs. Peters was struggling to keep hold of her. "Mrs. Danvers, please calm down. We were very clear at the assembly that we would take necessary measures to make sure every senior is on that bus." Clara dug the soles of her Converse into the tarmac. She reminded me of a petulant child throwing a tantrum. "I don't want to go to camp. I have my own life, you know." "You are part of this town as well as the high school, which means rules still apply." "But I'm 18. I'm a legal adult." Mrs. Peters ignored her outburst. "As I said, you are still a student. Therefore, you are expected to follow the rules. One of them is that the senior class will attend a mandatory summer camp before college. This has been going on for years, Mrs. Danvers. I expected more from a class valedictorian." The teacher sighed, like the girl was a defiant little kid. "You've been one of the smartest in your class since your freshman year, Clara. I did not expect this lack of intelligence from you. Do not ruin your reputation by acting like a child." Clara sputtered. "Oh, I'm a child? You just sprinted after me for 3 blocks over a damn summer camp, and I'm the one acting like a kid." "Clara, stop." "I will if you let go. Hey, you're hurting me." The two of them were getting further away, and all I could do was watch their shadows stretching across the sidewalk. I was debating whether to follow them to wherever they were going, but then a hand was grabbing my shoulder. I twisted around and found my mother. She didn't look mad or confused. Mom didn't ask question why I disappeared. Instead, her gaze had snapped to where I had been watching, Clara and the teacher. Mom's eyebrows furrowed, her lip curling like she was about to say something before seemingly snapping out of it. Mom shoved paper bags of groceries into my arms with a light smile, and I struggled to get a strict hold of them. She was looking at me, but I could have sworn her gaze was wandering, searching for something. "Did you pick a comic book, honey?" I shook my head. I felt kind of sick. Clara Danvers didn't have a choice whether she went to camp or not. None of her class did. When they tried to skip out, they were treated like animals. For summer camp? I couldn't understand why it was mandatory. No other town forced their kids to go to camp, so why did ours? I tried to smile at Mom. "Can we just go home?" Mom looked like she was going to protest but nodded. She had that expression, the one I dreaded, when she was trying to read me, delving into my mind. I wasn't a talkative kid, so my mom turned into my therapist. On that occasion, however, it was different. She paid no attention to my sickly cheeks and the lump in my throat. "All right," Mom inclined her head. I tried to ignore her craning her neck. She was definitely aware of Clara Danvers being wrestled onto a school bus. "Are you sure you're okay?" I chose to ignore the terrified faces of seniors pressed against the bus windows.
Yeah,
I said.
I just feel sick.
Okay, well, let's go get something to drink. I don't know how I managed to keep my mouth shut and nod, following Mom back to the car. It's not like Aceville's bizarre rule was a secret. I just didn't want to talk about it. But neither did Mom, from the look on her face. Instead of grilling me like usual, she took me for a chocolate fudge sundae at our local diner. I still remember the sickly feeling in my stomach when I struggled to swallow it, washing it down with Coke. I tried hard to pretend everything was okay, but I couldn't stop thinking about Claire and the way she had been treated. Dread filled me like poison, shivers rattling up and down my spine. I couldn't sit still. Was that my future? Was I going to be hunted down like that? And that's when I kept thinking, when Mom was talking excitedly about her plans for our next family vacation. I was discreetly counting on my fingers how many years I had before I turned 18. Until seeing Clara dragged away like an animal by a teacher, I considered one of the nicest people in town. I looked forward to 18. It was the age of independence, the peak of teenagehood. Though excitement turned to dread, I never saw Clara again, or the class of 2016. It's a well-known fact that freshly graduated kids go to camp and then straight to college. But I still found it strange. Once they were gone, the town forgot them and turned their attention to the new senior class. See, I watched this happen for 5 years. Kids followed in Claire's footsteps. She had started the rebellion after all, though none of them came close to escape like her. I watched them tear through the woods, laughing and whooping like it was a game. The girls stripped down to two-piece swimsuits, and in 2018, Mikey Blake streaked it. It almost went viral. Clara's story spread like a virus, and seniors took it as an opportunity to one-up her. I guess it became less of something to be scared of and more to anticipate. Sure, no kid wanted to be stuck at summer camp, but it was the hunt beforehand that excited them. They were always caught, always wrestled to the ground and treated just like Clara Danvers. Over the years, however, it became less scary to watch and more exciting, like watching the latest blockbuster. Who didn't want to watch kids chased by teachers with way too much time on their hands? I watched them year after year. My friends and I made bets on who would and who wouldn't get caught. We sat on the sidewalk with soda and burgers from the diner, cheering them on. We didn't pay attention to how they were treated. In our minds, it was fun. I won $200 in 2019. I bet my friend at least 5 seniors would try to skip town, and they did. Aceville felt like it was stuck in limbo between the 1980s and the present. Sure, we had cell phones and TikTok, but my aunt and uncle drove a total boomer mobile. Our local diner had an old-style aesthetic, and half the town didn't have televisions. Maybe they preferred to stay in the old days, though it's not like I was complaining. I liked it. I liked that we were different from others. Aceville, an idealistic town where there were more teens than adults. My friend Nick used to joke that it was like living in the world of Stranger Things. I had to agree. Luckily, though, we weren't under threat from aliens from different dimensions and teenagers with Carrie-like powers. 5 years after Clara, after watching the same crap year after year, it was finally our turn, the class of 2020. I was standing in the exact same store I'd been in 5 years ago when I first saw Clara, when I first witnessed the hunt. This time, however, I wasn't with my mother. I'd managed to score a part-time job to pay for college, and I'd just finished my shift. Smells Like Teen Spirit was playing for the millionth time that day on the crappy intercom radio. I did suggest the owner invest in an Alexa and got a "Kids These Days" lecture in return. He couldn't afford a decent radio, so every single song I liked had been mercilessly murdered. Thankfully, the store was empty that afternoon. There was a hot summer day in the middle of July, and the majority of the town, minus my class, were at the local swimming pool cooling off. This was the kind of heat that made me want to bury my head in the ground. There was zero aircon, so I had been fanning myself with old pamphlets. It was the last day on my job, and I had been rewarded with half of my wage and a crushed piece of chocolate cake wrapped in a napkin. "Have fun at camp," was all my boss said, his smile a little too wide. I had no doubts that the guy had already gambled the rest of my wage on whether my class would be captured or not. Throwing the cake away, I stuffed the crumpled notes in my shorts. I should have been thinking about college that day. I should have been thinking about how the hell I was going to pay for my tuition with barely $300, but I wasn't. I just had to survive the day, and then I'd think about college. Checking my phone, I made sure I had blocked my mother as well as my aunt and uncle. Dad wasn't in the picture. Not too much to say, I never knew him. Dad went for milk and cigarettes and never came back. Checking and rechecking the time, I pulled off my work shirt and stuffed it in the trash. I would definitely attract attention looking like a neon traffic light. I'd spent the last hours of my shift going over the plan in my head. It wasn't foolproof, and we had thought it up while drunk and high on mushrooms, but it was still a plan. Stepping out into the relentless heat, I was hopeful. Unlike my classmates, I wasn't joining their game. I had no intention of going to camp. I'd been curious as a kid, but over the years, the novelty had worn off. It was my last summer with Nick and Bobby, and I was going to spend every day with them doing what I wanted. We spent half of the year planning a road trip to Florida, and I was going to use the time away from town to finally come clean to Mom about Bobby. I was going to tell her everything, disappear for the summer and sneak back in September and grab my things. I didn't have plans for post-summer. I was smart enough for my dream college, but it was my lack of cash. Mom wasn't that well off and had made it clear that if I wanted to go to college, I had to pay for it myself. The talkie in my hand was store-bought. Nick had thrown it at me the night before. I scanned the parking lot. So far, it was clear. Tying my hair into a ponytail, I stepped out into sickly air that made my skin crawl. I twisted the dial on the talkie and held it to my mouth. Before I could speak, Nick's voice came through in a burst of hissing static. Hell, it's hot. They couldn't have picked a worse day to play their little game. Rolling my eyes, I couldn't resist a smile. What are the talkies for again? You forgot to say over. What are talkies for? I paused for a moment. Over? Because it's fun? Nick shot back. I could hear his heavy breathing as he catapulted into a run. Are you at the store? I'm heading towards the car. He paused. No. So far, no sign of teachers, which is a bad sign. That means they're lying in wait. I choked out a laugh. Nicholas, are you enjoying this? Our only entertainment is TikTok and catching fireflies in mason jars, he laughed. Of course I'm enjoying this. He let out a sharp hiss. Ah, crap. I've got visuals on Miss Cater. She's on the warpath, just gone past the dry cleaners. I'm going to need you to go slowly.
I'm going slowly?
No, I mean like slow motion slowly. Let's just focus on getting out of here. I started walking, checking for pursuers. According to the mass text the school had sent this morning, all seniors were expected to be on the bus at 1:30. It was 1:15. The plan was to get to Nick's car where we had stuffed all our bags the night before and step on it. Of course, parents had figured out we were going to try and flee town, so our cars had been confiscated. Luckily, though, Nick worked at a junkyard. He'd spent months turning a hunk of junk into a decent enough ride, so we were already one step ahead of them. Starting to jog, I leaped across the parking lot. Bobby, are you there? My stomach sank when the name escaped my lips. That feeling I'd been fighting with since we'd met, returning with vengeance. It wasn't confusion when I was 14 and had butterflies. No, it was guilt. I'd made a promise that I would tell Mom about us, but Mom was different. She wouldn't understand. She hated the idea of me dating. I took a guy home for dinner in sophomore year and she politely told him to leave. When he didn't, Mom started screaming at him. Mom was already weird about Bobby just being a friend. I had zero doubts she was going to freak out when I told her it was actually something more. Hmm? Bobby's voice was soft and smooth, slipping so effortlessly through static like it belonged in there. I'm about 2 minutes away. I raided my mom's kitchen for snacks before I left. Nick whooped. See, this is why I prefer you over Addie. This time I spluttered. That hurts. I've been working. I could hear the grin in his voice. You're not making your case any better. Bobby's voice cut through our laughter. Did you tell your mom about us yet, Addie? I stopped laughing, my footsteps faltering. The sun was a bastard baking into my back and I struggled to speak through the breath caught in my throat. I was struggling to coerce basic words when I caught movement in the corner of my eye. Expecting it to be a teacher, I started backing away, lowering my hand holding the talkie. But then I glimpsed familiar blonde curls tied into pigtails, catching the sun almost perfectly. The figure wasn't that far away, but I saw all of her, and I felt myself shatter. I wanted to tell Mom, I really did, but it was hard. Robin Atwood was the first person I fell for. Bobby was beautiful like every other kid in town, and I was still struggling to figure out how she liked someone like me. I had a stubby nose and my eyes were too far apart, in a town full of pretty people, I was kind of a bad egg.
It sucked that my parents had given me bad genes. Robin was perfect. Angelic features, a heart-shaped face and hair like liquid silk. Bobby was out. She had told her mother when we started dating. I chickened out. Luckily, our moms weren't mutual friends. If they were, screw camp. I'd probably be at military school. Bobby's smile was sweet, though I did raise my eyebrows at her prom dress. Not exactly the best outfit to escape town in, but her shoes were cute. Bobby's hair was tied back, stray curls dancing in her eyes. She was sweating, her cheeks paler than normal. Bobby was an anxious person in general, so the escape plan was probably tearing her insides apart. Still, she put on a brave face. Instead of talking about my mom, she pulled me into a quick hug, lacing her fingers in mine. I knew the conversation about my cowardice was coming, but it could wait. Bobby reached into her tote bag, pulling out a share pack of candy and waving them in my face. I didn't get you these for the car ride, since you promised to talk to your mom, but sure, I'll eat them on my own. I scoffed, shoving her when she laughed. Thanks. Fine, I'll give them to Nick. I tried to snatch the pack off of her. I'm pretty sure he's allergic, so good luck killing him. Nick's laugh came through tangled and static. I look forward to being poisoned. Bobby was fast, and so were her instincts. Before I could grab them, she shoved them in her bag, her lips splitting into a grin. She was pissed, but she wasn't pissed enough for an argument. Well, it's not like we had time before an argument. We should get going. Bobby squeezed my hand. Let's go. At that moment, all the dread eating me up inside slipped away. I pulled Bobby into a run and we left the parking lot, darting across the street. I could hear her yelling in the distance. No doubt our classmates were either getting caught or pulling a fast one. Nick, I said into the talkie, are you close? To my surprise, there was no answer. Nick had found every opportunity to use the damn thing, so it was strange that he'd disappeared. Bobby tried her talkie. Nick, are you there? The junkyard was a 5-minute walk and maybe a 2-minute run, if we sprinted. Nick wasn't answering, and the closer we got to the junkyard, a bad feeling started to coil in the pit of my gut. When I slowed down, bending over with my hands on my knees, gasping into humid air, Bobby tried to contact Nick again. She shook the talkie with a frown. Maybe it's faulty? I fixed her with a skeptical look. Both of them? I straightened up and pulled my phone out of my shorts. 5:20. The teachers were most likely doing a head count and were already on the prowl. I was shaking with adrenaline. We should get to the car, I gasped out. Our best case scenario is the idiot got distracted or broke the talkie. We shouldn't assume the worst. Bobby nodded, though her smile was thin. When we started running again, our shoes pounding the steaming tarmac, I felt a rush of deja vu. My ponytail flew behind me and I pumped my arms and legs hard, propelling my body faster. I was just like Clara, except, unlike her, I was going to make it. At least that's what I thought. The junkyard was in my sight when the talkie crackled with static. I was frowning at the mass of beaten-up cars covered in dirt and old engines, when an all-too-familiar voice filled the air. Adeline Calstone and Robin Atwood? The voice of our math teacher, Mr. Fuller, sent shivers crawling up my spine. I felt sick. There was no way he had tracked us down that fast. How is that even possible? Suddenly, all I could think about was Clara. All I could think about was the way she was dragged, kicking and screaming, and our class had treated it like a game. That was until it was our turn. Mr. Fuller's voice was stern. I suggest abandoning whatever plan you have and making your way to the school bus, please. When I was considering smashing the talkie against the gravel sidewalk, he continued, Your friend Nick Castor is a good runner, I'll give him that, but not fast enough. I expected more from a varsity captain. Idiot, Nick grumbled through the talkie. I took us all the way to regionals. Twisting around, my heart dropped into my gut. Nick's voice wasn't just clear on the talkie. It was close. Too close. I froze. Bobby pulled her hand from mine and squeaked her hand, slapping over her mouth. When I saw the two of them coming towards us, Mr. Fuller dragging Nick, I had the split-second thought of grabbing Bobby and running for it, but I wasn't going to leave my best friend. It didn't take long before the three of us were rounded up. Nicholas Castor was the quintessential high school golden boy. He stood at an imposing 6 feet with a lean, athletic build that spoke to years of dedication on the football field. His dark brown hair was awkwardly styled, and his freckle-dusted skin gave him an almost boyish charm. I used to have a crush on Nick as a little kid. Then, he opened his mouth. Now the boy was more like an annoying older brother. Are the restraints necessary? Nick spat when we were cuffed and pushed into the back of Mr. Fuller's car. Some people might call it kidnapping, but in Aceville on July 16th, it was the norm. We sat squeezed together in the back. Fuller's car was a dinosaur. I was pretty sure he was listening to music on a tape player. Nick tried singing along in his attempt to annoy the teacher into letting us go. I think he was trying to sing badly, but the guy was a decent singer. Halfway through Highway to Hell, and a surprisingly good guitar solo he was somehow managing with his arms pinned behind his back, complete with annoying mouth noises, I dug my elbow in his gut. Nicholas Castor failed a lot of things, like reading the room, for example, and social cues. He was supposed to be getting tested for ADHD, but according to the school, Nick was too sociable to be neurodivergent. I called bullcrap, but his parents agreed. The car ride didn't take long and was uncomfortable. The three of us were squashed like sardines with barely any space to move or breathe. Nick's knees were digging into my back, Bobby's head in my lap. When we arrived at school, we were thankfully uncuffed and transferred to the bus. I wasn't expecting us to be the ones that they were waiting on. I also wasn't expecting a round of sarcastic applause. Even Sadie and Danny had been caught. Nick did a mocking bow and Fuller thwacked the back of his head. I told you you wouldn't make it, Jake Carlisle yelled. Bobby pulled a face. At least we tried. When I was pushing my way to the back of the bus, keeping a tight hold of Bobby's hand and Nick's sleeve, we were greeted to a deluge of faces. Some kids held their hands up for a high five, which Nick happily slapped, but the majority of them looked disappointed. If we had failed to escape, then it really was impossible. There was no way out. Camp was inevitable. I found a seat quickly, right at the back, pulling Nick and Bobby next to me. Well, that failed. Nick let out a nervous laugh when the bus started moving. Your fault, Bobby grumbled. If you weren't kidnapped by our math teacher, we'd be halfway out of town right now. Nick tipped his head back with a laugh. Oh yeah, I'm so sorry for being chased for 3 blocks and threatened with a rock. I sent him a look. He threatened to throw a rock at you? Nick didn't meet my gaze. Yep, the guy's a psycho. I had to surrender. I've told you guys like 15 times that man is bad news, but you never listened to me. He trailed off when my gaze wandered. Like now, for example, Nick continued. I could say Fuller was my father and you'd be like, oh wow, really? That's really cool, Nick. The boy's babbling faded into a dull murmur in my head. I was frowning at two men dressed in black that had jumped at the last minute. They didn't look like anyone I knew. The two of them stationed themselves at the front. They didn't really fit in the whole summer camp aesthetic. Nick was still talking when the sound slammed into me. And that's why I don't get it. Glenn was a great character and they just killed him. Brutally too. His head looked like a deflated beach ball. I had no choice but to settle down in my seat and let the nauseating movements of the bus send my stomach hurtling into my throat. Nick pulled out his switch and Bobby lay her head against the window. I guess none of them wanted to talk, though I didn't blame them. Nick wanted to show me his new game, but I got bored. The lore was confusing and kept going off on tangents and forgetting what he was saying. When my phone buzzed an hour into the journey, I switched it off without looking at the screen. I had zero interest in talking to my smug mother. I don't know how long we were on the bus, but at points, I felt like we were going around in circles. I could have sworn we had passed the same sign, but when I pointed it out, Nick mumbled something unintelligible and Bobby was sleeping. Outside, the sky turned eerily dark. I could have been wrong, but I was sure we had been on the bus for hours, and nobody was questioning it. The others were either asleep or had earphones corked in. When we came to an abrupt stop, Bobby woke up and Nick put his switch away. The rest of the class seemed to snap out of the trance-like state that had swallowed them up. They started to ask questions. We were all ignored. Instead, one of the two men I'd spotted earlier stood up and addressed us. Can I have your attention, please? He cleared his throat. My name is Lawrence Shade, and I'm a recruiter. In a few minutes, you will watch a small film we have prepared which will give us an idea where to categorize you. Please be aware that watching the film is mandatory. What? Summer Forrest laughed. This is a joke, right? Isn't this supposed to be a camp? As soon as the words slipped from her mouth, I pressed my face against the window. It was raining. No, pouring. I don't know how I didn't notice. Nick leaned over me, his expression crumpling. When did it get dark? Bobby nodded. How long have we been on this bus? Before I could answer, a portable TV screen in front of me lit up with a white screen which turned green, then yellow, flicking from color to color, flashing in my eyes. Nick snorted. What the hell is this? But he was watching the screen. Bobby too, like it was drawing them in, leeching onto their minds. Murmurs around the bus confirmed my classmates were equally confused. I squeezed my eyes shut at first, but I was overcome with an overwhelming sense of curiosity. I let my eyes flicker open, but as soon as my gaze landed on the screen, on flashing colors hitting in quick succession, a sharp pain rumbled in my right temple. The colors kept going. I remember the sequence perfectly. Red, yellow, blue, green, repeat. I don't know how long I was staring at the colors. I don't know how long my body was frozen, my eyes unblinking, but I could feel my body reacting. My mouth was open, unable to close, a thin sliver of drool running down my chin. There was something warm sliding from my nostril. I couldn't wipe it away. My body was stuck, like I was paralyzed, like I'd never move again. Next to me, Nick and Bobby were frowning at the colors, but unlike me, they could move. Bobby was blinking, trying to keep up with them. Nick slowly inclined his head, his lips muttering silent words I couldn't understand. And then just like that, the screen flashed off. Bobby drew in a sharp breath and straightened in her seat. Nick blinked rapidly. I expected him to freak out, but he was strangely quiet. Addie, Bobby's eyes found mine. Your nose. Swiping gingerly at my nose with my bare arm, I let out a shuddery breath. We had to get out. Whatever the place was, it wasn't a summer camp. I could hear hisses around me and at the back of the bus and in the front, voices collapsing into white noise. When I risked turning my head, I spotted Serena Kyle with her hand pressed over her nose and mouth. She was doing a bad job of hiding the crimson stream flooding through her fingers. Suddenly, it felt like my world was crumbling in front of me. The two men started up the aisle, labeling each student. They held cans of spray paint like weapons, marking us with different colors. There were three colors, red, blue, and purple. When kids tried to protest, tried to make a run for it, they were cuffed and shoved back in their seats. There was so much screaming and fighting, I couldn't hear what the men with spray paint were saying. Nick grabbed my hand and I grabbed Bobby's. When one of the men reached the kids in front of me, the front of their shirts were sprayed deep, dark blue. The man studied the three girls like they were pieces of meat. These are all good. The girls he was talking about started talking over each other, but he blanked them. Blues will go into processing first, and purples will follow, if we can fix them. The man's words filled my mouth with phantom bugs. Addie, Bobby swiped at my nose, her eyes wide. What's going on? I had a feeling she wasn't talking about the spray paint. When the guard reached my seat, he sprayed a red circle on the front of my shirt. Red. That was new. I thought the guard was going to raise his hand to me, but instead he stuck his podgy fingers under the blood-crusted under my nose. Defect, he said. What? He ignored me, moving on to Nick. Purple. Nick tried to pull off his shirt defiantly, only for the guard to slap him across the face. The man seemed to study my friend, before grabbing Nick by the scruff of his neck. Pending, he grumbled, his fingernails grazing over freckles dotted on my best friend's cheeks. I'm not the one who will make a final choice. You better be as bright as you seem to be in good light, kid. Nick stumbled back, his gaze flicking to me. Run. Well, there was nowhere to run. Bobby shrieked when the man sprayed a blue circle on the front of her dress. I tried to stop him, but I was dragged by my hair, ragged like a wild animal. This one's good too, he yelled to the front. When the men were finished with the spray cans, we were told to file off the bus and join our respected color groups. Nick tried to fight a guard, only to be punched in the face, but he still tried again, swaying back and forth, screaming to be let go. When we tried to run, we were grabbed and thrown off the bus. I'm not sure how much time had passed. I was clinging on to my friends, and they were being pulled away. Nick and Bobby were treated like they mattered, forced into their color groups. I was shoved onto my knees in dirt which stained my legs. It was pouring, and my ponytail was plastered to my back. Other reds were forced next to me. There were around 12 of us in total. I know that because I took snapshots of each of them. Not names. Faces. Names hurt, so I remembered them by face. I remember Summer Forest next to me. I remember dirt streaked down her face. blood dripping down her chin. That's what we all shared, the Reds. We had all suffered the same nosebleed, crimson streaking down our faces, mixing with the rain. The 12 of us were put in a line in front of the bus, and when a woman in a pristine white suit and red hair addressed us under the light of her flashlight, I looked past her and found my gaze. I looked past her, and my gaze found our camp, not a camp. There was no sign of a campsite, the type of thing I had expected all those years leading to my senior year. Instead, in front of us was a multi-story building. In the distance, groups of purples and blues were being escorted inside automatic doors, while we were left in the rain for hours. The sky turned light and then dark, and we were made to wait. We could have been there for days. I lost all sense of time. I lost all sense of my own humanity. I knew why they were doing this to us, but I was in denial. I was in denial when 12 became 11, and then 10, then 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. Summer was screaming and I couldn't breathe. There were purple in front of me. I knew them. I'd known them since childhood. Mr. Doherty, the guy who lived across the street with his poodle Gloria, Eve Simmons, who owned the diner Nick, Bobby, and I had frequented the most of our lives, Mr. and Mrs. State, the elderly couple who brought over pudding when I was homesick from school. All I remember is waiting to follow the others, squeezing my eyes shut and screaming into the night, but then a warm hand was sliding into mine and pulling me to my feet. There was a gunshot and the sound of a body hitting the ground. Summer. I remember Nick pulling me away, but I will never forget Summer Forrest's body lying in a heap, pooling red stemming around willowy blonde hair. I don't know how Nick got me away, but all I recall is tripping over my own feet. He dragged us into trees and undergrowth as branches scratched at my face, pulling at my hair, but I didn't care. When Nick finally turned around to look at me, I screamed. I screamed until he slammed his hand over my mouth, shutting me up. The last time I'd seen my best friend, he definitely had two eyes, both intact. Now one of them was hanging out like a cartoon. It was almost uncanny valley how inhumane he suddenly looked. Nicholas Castor was wearing what looked like torn hospital scrubs. The skin of his face had been scraped away, leaving bloody flaps of flesh where his cheeks used to be. His lips were swollen, half of his hair sheared off, and yet somehow, part of him looked beautiful, or at least, the start of beautiful. Nick had a jawline. But it was unfinished. Everything about him was incomplete. His full mouth of veneers were clumsy, like a psycho dentist had been playing with his teeth. It was hard to look at him. My friend had been mutilated. Nick spat a tooth into the dirt. "I got out," he managed to gasp out, his voice slurring. He slowly removed his hand from my mouth, shaking his head when I opened my mouth to speak. "Shh." His smile was almost drunken. "It's okay. I got out. They had me on a ton of sedatives, so just bear with me." "Out?" I shrieked. "Out of where?" Nick held his eye inside his socket with one hand and held mine with the other. "Processing." The word rolled off his tongue. He stopped like he was going to throw up. He threw a glance behind me before spewing lumps of red through his fingers. "Yeah, processing. Processing the art of being processed." "What? What are you talking about?" Nick pulled me further into the trees, flattening us into the dirt. "That place," he gasped out. It's not a good place." I slapped him. I needed Nick to snap out of it. "Where is she?" I managed to squeak. "Where's Bobby?" Nick looked completely sober for a moment, blinking rapidly. He shook his head and the fright and pain in his eyes sent my heart into my throat. His eyes were hollow, filled with darkness I could never and wouldn't ever understand. Somehow I already knew I'd lost him. "We're going to die, Addie," Nick said in a half giggle. His eyes rolled to the back of his head, his body hitting the ground with a soft thump. Following his declaration, a blinding searchlight illuminated my face. "We've got movement," a female voice yelled. Taking two steps back, I ducked into the undergrowth. Whatever that place was, Bobby was in there, and Nick, a purple, was my only way of getting anywhere near that place. So, hoisting my unconscious friend onto my shoulder, I turned and ran. And that's the end of this story. I hope you enjoyed it, this little prequel to the Camp Redwood series and just kind of how Camp Redwood came to be and its mischievous past. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you thought. And if you'd like to hear more, let me know that too. Subscribe for more, obviously, like, you know, share things. Everything we try and get across, I guess, as YouTubers and podcasters. But hey, I appreciate you for listening. A huge shout out to you. If you're a patron of the channel, I appreciate your support. And if you'd like to support us, if you're not a patron, well, there is a Patreon. Have I said that enough times? Anyway, there is a Discord too if you'd like to come hang out. That'd be fun. We talk about random things, and it's usually a pretty good time. So I guess with all that said and enough rambling, I appreciate you for being here. Hope you enjoyed yourself, and I hope to see you in the next one. Take care now. Bye-bye then.